Well, it's been one of the coldest weeks in recent memory here in the Mid-Atlantic and in Baltimore, Maryland. It's the perfect time to crank up that hot stove. And very fitting, the Hot Stove Baseball Show returns to WBAL tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Jim Hunter and Raku Bacco from Masson. And Jim joins us now. Jim, happy hot stove season.
Well, Brett, it is great to be back in WBAL. And as you mentioned, with the weather being so cold, in fact, today, I was coming home running errands, and it was 28 degrees, and 28 never felt so warm.
Balmy outside.
A couple of days, so very, very excited to be heading back on WBAL to talk about the Orioles. And as we now, you know, put the Christmas decorations away, and now you start thinking about, hey, spring training's around the corner, so perfect time to be talking about the team.
Yeah, what, 3.5 weeks to FanFest. I've been getting emails today, not only about FanFest, but ball girl tryouts and ball boy tryouts coming up. That means we're really close.
You know, it's amazing how the fans gravitate to the specific things that happen every offseason. And it's funny you mentioned that about FanFest. Today I was at 7-Eleven on my way to the gym, and a guy saw me and he said, Jim, when is FanFest? Shouldn't it be coming up soon? And I said, oh, by coincidence, the Orioles announced you could get your tickets today. And he said, oh, great, I got to take my kids down there. So it's something that the fans look forward to every year. Last year was just phenomenal coming off of the playoff season the year before. And I would expect we're going to have a huge crowd because it's a little later, February 1st, and literally is right at the back door of when that truck is going to head south with all the equipment. So it should be really, really well received. And it should be, because the team, without a doubt, is certainly going in the right direction.
Jim Hunter with us right now on WBAL. And Jim, before we get more into the Orioles and tomorrow night's show, I have to ask you about the Hall of Fame vote today. And I would put your baseball acumen and your knowledge of the history of the game as high ranked as anybody I've ever talked with or heard on the radio or on television. And also, what's interesting about this, Jim, for me, the players we're talking about now are guys I grew up, you know, rooting for and really following in the height of my fandom. But these are people you called all the games of in a lot of respects when you're talking about Thomas and Glavine and Maddux. And you know, from that vantage point, your thoughts on the vote today.
Yeah, the Glavine and Maddux pitching duo there, and it would have been Smoltz as well if he didn't pitch that one more year. But I can recall back in the 90s when the Braves were really, really good, doing postseason games on CBS radio with Jerry Coleman, as a matter of fact. He just passed away the other day, and some of the brilliant games that we saw those guys pitch. Of course, the Hall of Fame, it's more of regular season stats, but I'm sure the voters take into account some of the great postseason memories that they have of these players. And Frank Thomas, the same thing. If you go back to those mid-90s White Sox teams, Jeff Torborg kind of built what became the Gene Lamont teams in the mid-90s. And Frank Thomas was as good as there was at that time. You talk about winning back-to-back MVPs as he did. He was a guy that set the bar and dominated his position during his era. And that, to me, defines what a Hall of Famer is. But I will say, Brett, I was very disappointed at the way the voters in the Baseball Writers Association handled this concerning Craig Biggio. I'm getting a little annoyed as somebody who watches baseball games every day for a living, hearing, well, he was a compiler. I don't think these guys understand how difficult it is to have 3,000 hits in a season. And a compiler, to me, is a compliment in the sense that that means you are consistent enough over your career to get it done. And for him to come 2 votes short because there are rumors out there that he may have been on steroids or PEDs when he never failed a drug test and never was insinuated by anyone in authority in baseball for that, to me, it was just really, really a bad job on the writer's part. He deserves to be in. I realize numbers aren't certainly automatic, but you put 3,000 hits up. Go ask Cal Ripken how difficult that is and how consistent you have to be to get 3,000 hits in a career. So except for the Biggio omission, it looked to me like pretty much what you expected, because every year, well, except for last year when nobody got him, but every year there's usually a lock or two. And this year there were three, but Biggio really should have been going as well.
Jim, last night on my show, I was going over so many Mike Mussina memories that I have growing up. Truly one of my favorite athletes of all time, and I just thought the world of him as a pitcher, especially growing up here. And to me, I do think he gets in at some point. I don't think it will be next year. I think maybe after that, because, of course, Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez also on the ballot next year to go up against the Schillings of the world and the Mussinas of the world. And Mussina gets 20% of the vote today. Is that about right for you for a first-timer? Do you think he gets in? Does he deserve to get in?
I think he's right there, and I think, as you do, that he probably will get in. And I think it's kind of ironic when you look back at his career, and I realize the Orioles did make the playoffs in 96 and then again in 97, and they had a competitive team in 94, 95. But his numbers in his career actually were better as an Oriole than they were when he pitched in New York for the Yankees. And when he pitched for the Yankees, they were contenders every year. And I don't know if anyone can understand why that is. You know, once he left, we only saw him when the Orioles played the Yankees. But he, without a doubt, was a dominant pitcher during his era. And I think you have to give him a little bit more towards the positive on the vote because he spent his entire career in the AL.
I agree.
It is without a doubt the toughest division. You know, now the Orioles play the Yankees 19 times. They play the Red Sox 19 times. These hitters know the pitchers so well. The pitchers have to adjust and try to figure out a different way to get them out that time. And then once they do, the hitters already figure that out and he changes it. So I think, you know, he won two more games than Jim Palmer, right? So he obviously did something in his career that is worth looking at. You know, he finally got the 20-win season that eluded him a couple of times with the Orioles. Not his fault. There are a couple of times where he had 19, was in line for a win, and the bullpen let the game get away. But he certainly has numbers that will be discussed. But I think what you said, Brett, really is the right thing about this. It's going to depend on who else is on that ballot when his name or the writers go to vote for him, because if there are clear no doubt about it, and these writers don't even think there are no doubt about it, it's because Maddox wasn't unanimous, which I can't figure that out. But if there are too many other guys that are sure things, it'll just push it back. But I think eventually he'll get in because he was very, very consistent. And you might argue that he didn't dominate his position during his career, but he certainly was one of the pitchers who did. And he certainly did that in his years with the Orioles. And the five or so that I was here that he pitched, he was as good as anyone in baseball.
Yeah, the American League East factor, all 18 years of his career in the AL East at the height of the steroid era. And, of course, we don't know what every player did behind the curtain. To me, Mike Mussina strikes me as someone who probably didn't use PEDs, but he goes 18 years in the most powerful division in probably the height of its power in baseball in the American League East, and he was truly one of the best pitchers in the division through that entire stretch. And the other thing is, it's so ironic about the numbers of baseball, Jim. We talk about 20 wins. He gets 20 wins in his final season in 08. He had 16 wins when the lights were shut out on August 12th of 1994 when the players went on strike. 16 wins at that date. He probably gets another 8 starts. And then in a strike-shortened 1995 season, he has 19 wins. So then you're probably talking about a guy who ends up with 3 20-win seasons and another season, I believe, he had 19 wins. So, you know, he really was at the top of the food chain.
You know, and you wonder, because after he left the Orioles had some very thin years in terms of being competitive. But there's something to be said about playing an entire career in one uniform.
Yep.
And Jim Palmer, well, he's a lock. I mean, he won 20 games 8 times in 3 Cy Young Awards. I mean, you know, you talk about dominating your position. But would Moose have broken Jim's record for victories as an Oriole had he stayed? We'll never know. He made a decision for his career, and you have to respect that. But had he stayed in Baltimore his entire career, might he have been able to make a run knowing that he had better teams in New York after he left the Orioles? We'll never know that, but certainly the numbers are there. And you know, anytime you have an ERA around 3.50, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, 3.50 in this era in the AL East, that means you're giving your team a chance to win every single time you take the mound. And as a starter, that's all you can ask. I mean, W's and wins in a one-loss record are important, but it's how many games have your team won? And your team has a better chance to win if your starter gives them a chance to win that day. Whenever he took the baseball, I guarantee you the Orioles thought they were going to win.
Jim Hunter's with us, and again, tomorrow night, the return of Hot Stove Baseball. It will be Jim and Rakubako, 7 to 9 tomorrow, right here on BAL. And Jim, what are some of the topics you and Rock are going to get into tomorrow night?
Well, one of the things is, you know, I've been reading everyone on Twitter and following, you know, Rock and Steve on MassinSports.com, and the fans obviously are a little nervous because there hasn't been that big marquee move yet. But one of the things I've learned, I'm going into my 18th season with the team, is it's still early. It really is. And this isn't a company line. This is the reality of it. I've learned over the years not to get too concerned until about the middle of spring training. If there are deficiencies and they haven't been met by then there's time that, maybe what are we going to do here? Maybe there's a trade or whatever. But there's still time for this team to improve, and I think they will. And I think that's a big topic. And there are things out there. Obviously, they have to address the closer unless they go internal. They're still looking for a hitter, and they're still looking for another starter. Will A.J. Burnett decide to drive down the Jarrettsville Pike and start to pitch at Camden Yards because he lives here year-round, and I see him in the supermarket all the time. In fact, last time I should have asked him if he was going to pitch here. But I'm very confident in this regime. Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter are a great partnership, and most importantly, those two know what it takes to win. A couple of years ago, they put together a team that came out of nowhere to some, but it earned it. You know, you don't win 93 games again in the postseason by a fluke. They earned it because they knew what they needed to do, and they went out and did it. And I'm still confident they're going to be able to get that done. And, you know, all these pitchers that Duquette has signed and traded for, yeah, they may not be marquee names, but how many teams out there right now are looking at their bullpen and going, ooh, you know, we can use a guy here or there? Well, there's always the opportunity to package a surplus. And one of the things we've learned with Dan since he came here is he's a big believer in depth. Depth at the major league level, depth at AAA especially, and then hopefully you have prospects coming along. They may be able to put something together for trade to bring something back that they know they need. And that's why, I say, what is today, the 7th of January? It's still very early in that sense. Yes, it's getting late early, but they still have time to get things done. I'm pretty confident they will.
Well, we look forward to tomorrow night. It should be a good show at 7 o'clock. Hot Stove Baseball is back on WBAL, a great sign. We are, in fact, driving towards spring, which is just nice when it's been about 0 degrees this week. Jim and Rock tomorrow night right here on BAL. Thank you so much, Jim.
Hey, Brett, always a pleasure to be with you, and it's great to be talking baseball again.
And I can't wait to see you tomorrow. That's Jim Hunter. We'll come back with more next here on BAL.